This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
You start with a deadlift. The higher the weight, the better your score. A 10-pound medicine ball throw. Then you have 2 minutes to do as many hand-release push-ups as you can, resetting between each rep.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, that's part of the Army physical fitness test. I'll share with you a little bit more about what's happening in our U.S. military. The Army might have to change their gender-neutral test. You know, I've been covering this for you. I'll break it all down. Coming up in just a few moments, we'll be joined by the Center for Military Readiness, we'll talk much more. But right now, though, if you're just joining me, I am here with Dave and Joan Maroney, great apostles of divine mercy. That's what I like to call them, because they've been spreading divine mercy with a passion. It's something as dear to their heart as it is to mine. And if you missed my conversation a little bit earlier, I was just sharing a little bit about the origin of the divine mercy image and what the Lord said. He says, I desire that this image be venerated first in your chapel and then throughout the world. And I always had my images blessed on the great feast of divine mercy. On that day, the Lord promised that the floodgates of his mercy would be open. Now, you know, in this new book that is out, and Relevant's going to send it to you free, just go to relevantradio.com, you'll learn all about the image, and then you'll learn about Faustina and Blessed Sapochko and the Feast of Mercy and all these things. So if this is all new to you and you're kind of excited, you say, I want to learn more about divine mercy, that's a great 101 for you. And in it is an image of divine mercy. And you can take that out, you can frame it, and put it on your desk and next to your nightstand, stick it in the car, do whatever you want with it. But I think there's an anointing on this image, and the Lord promised special protection, as I have mentioned to you in the past. You know, he promised that there would be graces that flowed from this. And Dave and Joan, let me bring you back into this conversation, because I want to talk about the Feast of Mercy as well. You know, the Lord says, you know, by this image, I'm going to grant great grace to souls. He promised protection for those souls. But he specifically wanted this on the Feast of Mercy, didn't he? What did he say about that, and why is this so intricately connected to the great Feast of Mercy?
Well, when he appeared to St. Faustina in 1931, and this comes from diary entry 49, he said, I want this image, which you will paint with a brush, to be solemnly blessed on the first Sunday after Easter, and that Sunday is to be the Feast of Mercy. So, the image of mercy is a big part of the celebration of Divine Mercy Sunday that John Paul II proclaimed, will be called Divine Mercy Sunday, which is always the Sunday after Easter, the octave of the resurrection. Yeah.
And the reason he uses that image is because it's the image of the resurrected Christ. You know, on Good Friday, and in the church we have our crucifix where we remind that Jesus, yes, he suffered and he died for our sins, but he rose from the dead. And he's alive today, and he's living amongst us. And as we said in the earlier segment, the rays that are coming out remind us of, the blood and water that poured at his side. But now, after his death and resurrection, he's coming to us through the sacraments of the church, particular confession, baptism, and the Holy Eucharist. He's totally present with us. He's here now. That's why he wants that image to remind me, I have not left you. I am near you. I am with you. Yeah. I'm loving you, and I'm pouring my mercy out upon you.
Well, I know you two are going to be coming, you said, to the area, and you mentioned to me for the great Feast of Mercy. So we'll have to have you stop by the studio so we can talk more, and especially get everybody plugged into what the Lord promised regarding this great feast day. If people want to follow you, I know you've got, I think, a YouTube channel too. What's the best way to connect?
Well, there's the DivineMercyForAmerica.org website, and you can click on membership. We send out different emails, different novenas that we do, and the upcoming, of course, the Divine Mercy Novena. Starting on Good Friday, we'll send out a daily email with the prayers right there. You can get it as an email or a text. People tell us that they really like the convenience of just having the prayers. They can participate in these novenas, you know, right off of their phone and like that. And then also on our YouTube channel, go to youtube.com and type in Divine Mercy for America, and the channel should come up. Yeah. Please subscribe. You know, that really helps get the message out to a hurting world.
Well, thank you both. Dave, Joan, always a delight. I wish we had some more time, but we'll talk soon, I'm sure, okay?
Awesome, Drew. Love you, guys. And God bless all you. God bless all the listeners out there. If you're listening, just get to Jesus, Amen. Get to the Catholic Church. Jesus is in the Mass, and he's waiting, he's there with full of love and mercy for you.
Amen to that. I love your passion, guys. Keep up the great work, okay? You can check them out online. We're going to link over to them as well. And as I said, we'll catch up with them again soon. Hey, I've got to change gears. You know, as I say, and I know I say it a lot, time really is the enemy. It goes so quickly here on the broadcast. I want to fill you in on the latest bit of news now unfolding within our U.S. military. And I know yesterday we talked a little bit about the $100 billion we're going to be spending on nuclear weapons. We talked to Dr. Peter Pry about how we would fare against China. Well, I've been a little bit unplugged with some news. One of my producers was telling me that Tucker Carlson set off a firestorm last week. He said, so, we got new hairstyles, we got maternity flight suits, pregnant women are going to fight our wars. It's a mockery of the U.S. military, he said. While China's military becomes more masculine, our military needs to become, as Joe Biden says, more feminine. It's out of control, and the Pentagon's going along with this. Again, this is a mockery of the U.S. military and its core mission, which is winning wars. So that statement, that was Tucker Carlson. He said it brought all kinds of condemnation from a lot of different people from different groups, some within the military itself. But reflecting on that, I was thinking about what he said. I said, he's not far off in his criticism. Last year, the U.S. Army, it changed its physical standard testing from two separate ones, one for men and one for women, to a single test for both genders called the Army Combat Fitness Test. And the idea was that these are the standards that we need to set for everyone who's going to be going into combat. So it doesn't matter if you are male or female, 18 or 35, according to the Post, they were reporting you need to be able to do what you need to do. If you need to be able to do leg tucks, which is a kind of a pull-up, you carry, kettlebells or drag sleds across a field, throw a 10-pound ball, do hand push-ups, whatever, right? You're scored on a 600-point scale, and if you get a 360 or better, you pass. If not, you fail. Well, those standards have proved to be very difficult for women to achieve. My daughter is a U.S. Marine. I mean, she had served the nation, and she did the same thing that every man had to do. And I was saying, the requirements for the Army, the requirements for the Air Force, and everybody has a different requirement. It's not all set the same. But I was just saying to a friend of mine, one of my producers, his son is thinking about going into officer training for the U.S. Marines. And I said, here's the deal. Just as a father, if I had a son in combat and there was a female next to him who couldn't pull him to safety, her inability to do that compromises the life of my child. So I have no problem with an equal standard set. And if that's the case, then maybe the women should not be on the front line. I know it sounds politically incorrect. If she can do what the man can do, and help her fellow Marine or Air Force or Navy or Army member, military, her brother, get to say, fine, more power to him. And I hope that doesn't sound politically incorrect, but that's the bottom line here, right? That to me is the bottom line. It's about the safety of our troops. It's not about being politically correct. So I'm joined right now by Elaine Donnelly, founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. She's an independent, that group's an independent policy organization, specializes in military personnel issues. And I've spoken to her about these types of issues in the past. I invited her back. It's been a while since we've talked, but it's always good to have her here with me. Check her out online at cmrlink.org, cmrlink.org for Center for Military Readiness. Elaine, it's been too long, but thank you for coming back.
Yes.
Good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you, Drew.
So
are we busy these days?
Oh, my gosh. There is so much to talk about. I'm not too politically incorrect. I hope that didn't sound bad. I mean, my daughter, who is extremely feminine, I mean, she's a beautiful girl, but she did not want to be treated separately when she went into the Marines. She wanted to do exactly what those guys did, and she would be a row guard. I mean, she'd even take on more responsibility just to prove that as a woman she could do it. I mean, that's the type of attitude that she has. If my son was in battle and they're being shelled and he's got to be drugged to safety, I want somebody who can do that. Your thoughts on this? I mean, was Tucker right on his analysis and what ails the military? What do you think of lowering the standards for females?
Well, where to begin? First of all, Tucker Carlson was not, I repeat, not critical of women in the military. The way the reaction came from the Pentagon, somebody let those dogs out, and they trained fire on Tucker Carlson as if he had been critical of women in the military, and that wasn't it at all. If you look very carefully, and even just a casual listening to what he said, he was criticizing policymakers and the priorities that they are bringing to their job these days. What we're seeing when you have the President of the United States in a formal news conference, and I believe it was the same one where he could not remember the name of the Secretary of Defense standing right next to him, he bragged about the maternity flight suits and the hairstyle changes, things like that. And it was a reflection of what we are seeing at the Pentagon. The Pentagon is obsessed with diversity these days. Diversity is a strategic imperative. We keep hearing that. And we're getting further and further away from the kinds of values that your daughter and most of the people in the military, both men and women, what they expect, what they fight for, what they believe in. Instead, people are being judged by other factors, like the color of their skin.
Right,
but
right.
The whole racial issue, we'll deal with that another time. Let's talk about maternity flight suits, okay? There is an issue here. As a member of the Presidential Commission that studied the issue of women in combat for a full year, we discussed this issue among many things. And what we found and what has become apparent since then is aviation is a very hazardous occupation for women of childbearing age. And here's why. You have high decibel noise. You see those guys on the aircraft carriers with the great big things over their ears to protect their ears? Well, a baby in the womb doesn't have ear protection, okay? Which is why a lot of women drop out of aviation. You also have high decibel, well, in addition to high decibel noise, you have vibration. This is especially apparent in helicopters. Okay, a lot of vibration, a lot of noise. Women drop out of helicopter operations rather early in their pregnancy, and many don't go back. You also have toxic fumes. Jet fuel, for instance, is very toxic, not to the adults, but to a developing unborn child. So is it any surprise that a lot of women don't go into combat aviation? They find other ways to serve their country. And yet, here's the Pentagon pushing 25% or higher quotas to have females in all branches and communities, including direct ground combat, the units that attack the enemy with deliberate offensive action. And we even have a retired admiral, actually a vice admiral. She's on one of the diversity commissions that Biden just set up recently.
Right, right.
She says that there should be 25% women on every Navy ship.
Wow.
Now, if diversity is the primary thing, let's take this to a ridiculous extreme.
That's silly. You know, go ahead. That's just so silly. It drives me crazy to hear that.
If you really want to be logical about this, let's take it to a ridiculous extreme. Since we know that high decibel noise and vibration can harm an unborn child, should those flight suits be the equivalent of bubble wrap?
Mm-hmm.
Should they have the equivalent of the earphones to stop the noise from damaging the unborn child? What do you do about these toxic fumes? Well, we can have airplanes that are electric, right? No, I don't think so. Doesn't work that way.
Nope.
So there are certain choices that have to be made based on priorities. And the priority should be not just safety, as you mentioned, but the effectiveness of our combat troops.
You're right.
Now, Tucker Carlson, as a civilian, and I'm a civilian too, had every right to be critical of the leadership of our Pentagon. Their priorities are so skewed now, and it's only going to get worse, that everybody should be exercising civilian oversight of our military, and that includes members of Congress, especially the members of Congress. But they have not looked at the issues of women in combat in over 40 years in the House, since 1991 on the Senate side. I was there testifying that day. The only thing they look at is sexual assaults and harassment in the military. They've not had any hearings on any of these recommendations for what is good for women in the military. I was a member of a policy advisory committee in the Pentagon, and we talked about things like female boots and gear and things like that. And to a certain extent, those are good things to do. You want women to be able to serve with comfortable equipment and gear and safety and all those things. I'm all for that. But if you start talking about maternity flight suits, when female pilots are not supposed to be flying beyond a certain level of their pregnancy once the pregnancy is known, that's a regulation. Why is the Pentagon investing money in maternity flight suits? It is certainly the kind of question that we should be asking, and it's a reasonable question, and it was by no means intended to denigrate women in the military or anybody else.
Yeah, my guest today, Elaine Donnelly, she's president of the Center for Military Readiness. Let's take a few of your calls if you want to join us. Feel free to dial in. Sandolph, 888-914-9149. Polly is listening in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Polly, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. It's always nice to call your line. Thank you so much for everything you guys do on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for saying
thank
that.
Thank you. Elaine, thank you for standing up for some common sense. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just listened to you, and I love everything you said, and you took the words right out of my mouth and so much more. God bless you for trying to wake these people up to what's really going on, the bigger picture. I know one of my opinions on the maternity flight suits is because there is so much damage that could be done to this child, you know, it could potentially not only hinder this child's life, but end it all in general. That could just... I don't mean to sound like one of those, but there are, unfortunately, not good people in this world who are population control and such things. And I don't know, that's just where my mind goes. My other concern with women in the military, now I know a lot of female soldiers and they're amazing. They're amazing. But
yes, they are.
Trying to almost overload it, and like Drew was saying, like you were saying, having a woman in the field, and if she can, you know, drag your injured son off of the field and into safety, that's a huge concern for, I think, every parent. And one of my, if you look at it from a natural human perspective, it's a man's natural instinct to protect a female. It doesn't matter if it's family or not, it's a female. It is a man's natural instinct to defend that woman. So there is always the potential that if we get too many women on the field, these men are going to follow their instincts instead of keeping their mind in the battle. There's so many other bigger pictures that we need to look at when it comes to that.
Well, Polly, thanks for calling. Let me let Elaine respond to you. A lot there, Elaine.
Right. With regard to the last comment, there is a plan to teach men not to be overly concerned about their female colleagues. And this goes way back. It goes back to training for what happens when there's a prisoner of war, a woman being threatened by the enemy. It's called SEER training, survival, evasion, resistance, escape. I was there and I saw the training, and they told us about how the men are trained to be not indifferent, but certainly not to overreact if they are aware of a woman being tortured by the enemy. But I digress. Getting into equal standards, there was a one of the women who passed in Ranger training. She's an outstanding woman by any measure, Kristen Griest. She made a lot of news last week. She said standards should not be lowered, and she got a lot of praise for that. But I would praise her more if she also said we have to get rid of gender diversity quotas. It's the quotas that cause the standards to be lowered. Because if you have, and let's look at this ACFT test that you mentioned, Drew, the original unofficial test on it showed the failure rate among women was 84%. Okay, then they made some modifications. Instead of the leg pull-up thing, they did planks instead. Then they came out with 65% failure rate for females, still unacceptable. Now they're saying, well, let's score them differently. Let's make everything blind. When their record comes before promotion or pass-fail or whatever, no pictures, no names, no nothing that is gender-identifying. Right. And we'll put all the women's scores in one pot, and all the men's over there. We'll have separate bands or blind scoring. Okay, what percentile band are you in? So the top percentile woman would be compared to the top percentile man. All right, now that's like saying that the high school champ football game quarterback is the equivalent of Tom Brady.
Yeah, right.
Okay? I mean, you can't make comparisons like that. Maybe they're the best among the women, but even the best among the women is usually at a lower level of achievement among the men. I'm not making this up. The Marines did a 3-year test. It was all scientifically monitored by University of Pittsburgh. The figures are there. The scores are there. We reported on it in testimony that I presented to the Senate Armed Services Committee only last week. And yet, the Senate hasn't acted on these facts. They've ignored them. They're trying to pretend that men and women are interchangeable in all roles. It's just not working. So the failure of the combat fitness test and the idea that they're saying, well, we better scrap it because women can't pass in great enough numbers, this is a sign that the social engineering experiment is a crashing failure.
That's so true. All right, let me grab another quick call. John's listening in Huntington Beach, California. Spent 30 years in law enforcement. Hi, John.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment about the women and pregnancy. We went through this in law enforcement, immediately yanking pregnant female patrol officers out of patrol. It is flat out illegal to do that. It violates the Americans with Disability Act. A pregnant pilot can fly an airplane. You can't take somebody out of their job unless you can show that they're incapable of doing their job. And then the testing process, you know, the skills needed to be an infantry soldier in the Army are very, very different than the skills needed to fly a combat aircraft or a combat helicopter. And those skills of multitasking, being able to do more than one thing at a time in a quick-moving environment, women may very well be more skilled at those kinds of things. And if you had a testing process that was for the job that it's assigned, women might actually be better off in piloting roles than men.
Yeah. And, John, that's a great point. Hold the thought, okay? I have to take a quick break. When we come back, let's pick up on that. So do we assign specific duties for women? And that might be a solution to it. But what's that mean for the basic combat fitness test and a lot of these other issues? When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. My guest today, Elaine Donnelly, you can join us too. Feel free to sound off. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Just as we say grace before meals, now the priest prays the prayer over the gifts. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 24th lesson on the Mass. There are three prayers which are unique for each daily Mass: the opening prayer, the prayer over the gifts, and the prayer after communion. If the Mass is in honor of the Blessed Mother, those three prayers will be related to her. If the Mass is in honor of a martyr, the three prayers will be related to that martyr, and so forth. The rubrics state, with hands extended, the priest sings or prays the prayers over the gifts, at the end of which the people respond, why does the priest extend his hands? Once again, it's body language that shows that he and all of the congregation are open to the gifts that God wants to give them.
Mass with Father Rocky, noon Central.
And join us for Class After Mass. Hi, I'm Cale Clark. It's The Faith Explained, 12:30 Central every day on Relevant Radio.
At all the news and issues of the day. News and issues of the day. Right now. Right now. This is The Drew Mariani Show. Getting you connected on Relevant Radio.
Hey, it is great to be here with you today. If you're just joining me, we are taking a look at the U.S. Army. And last year, they changed their physical standard tests from two separate ones, one for men and one for women, to a single test for both genders. It's called the Army Combat Fitness Test. And that's what we're discussing today. You know, what are those standards? Are they fair? If you are at a combat unit and there are critical situations, I mean, what's the standard that a female should meet? And online with us is John from Huntington Beach. He's a law enforcement officer. He's been working in law enforcement for years, and he saw this when it came to women who were pregnant. It raised a lot of questions. John, you could even restate your point. My guest today, by the way, before I do that, is Elaine Donnelly. She's the founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. And Elaine, it's good to have you here. And John, to your point, I mean, if I'm understanding you correctly, if we can target specific duties for women, whether it's aviation or a particular duty, then that's fine. Do you have concern at all about being in a combat unit where a woman cannot meet the physical criteria to drag a man or somebody to safety in the event that their life depends upon it? Maybe you could restate your statement. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, well, okay, that's a great question to ask. If I was an infantry soldier, I might be very concerned about somebody, another soldier who could not drag me, right, you know, out of the line of fire. But if I'm a helicopter pilot, I might feel very, very comfortable that female aviators were flying next to me, because they might be very well more skilled than a male aviator is. They're smaller, they're more compact. Generally speaking, I found that they can multitask better. Your right hand has to move in a completely different direction than your left hand. Both your feet have to operate independently of one another, and all the while, you have to be communicating with your ground control, your other aircraft in the air. Women, I think, I don't want to say that I have scientific evidence of this, are more capable in that kind of environment. So it very much depends on the combat environment that you're in.
I think it's a great point, John. Let me go to Elaine. Elaine, your thoughts on this?
Yes, John is correct. There's a lot of really good female pilots out there. But this discussion started out with a discussion of maternity flight suits. We're talking about pregnant female pilots, okay? Now, there are risks to the woman, to an unborn child if she is pregnant. That's why there are rules against pregnant women flying aircraft, certainly combat aircraft, certainly helicopters that have vibration in addition to the high decibel noise. You always have the jet fuels that are toxic. You have radiation. You have other things that affect not just her health, but the health of the unborn child. So these regulations make sense. The problem is that the military has fallen into the trap of pushing for gender diversity metrics. That's another word for quotas. If you have to have 25% women in these squadrons, what happens is you make compromises, and in many cases, and we confirmed this on the Presidential Commission, women are not being told of the risks to their health. And we confirmed it several years ago. It's another issue with submarines, with the circulating atmosphere on a submarine that is toxic to an unborn child, not to the adults. Now, we even filed FOIAs to find out, are women being informed of these risks? We got nothing in return. But I'll tell you this, the women are figuring it out for themselves because they're very smart. And a lot of them don't stay in aviation for a long time. So the investment in, you know how much it costs to train a pilot? $5 to $10 million, depending on what type of aircraft it is. Okay, that's a lot of money. And we talked about this on the Presidential Commission. With that kind of an investment, do we really want to have pilots who may be the best pilot in the world, but if they're not there when needed because of all these secondary but very important issues, then how does this improve military readiness? How does it make that squadron stronger? These are issues, and I'm sure it's the same way in law enforcement as well. There's so many good things that women can do in that field. But when you're talking about treating women exactly like men, they have to meet the same standard, even though physiologically they cannot, then you make the job more difficult, more dangerous, and you endanger not just the people in the military or the law enforcement unit, but the general public as well, people that depend on them to do their job and to do it well. Yeah. And again, it's all about the policy makers. It's not the women. The women don't make policy for these things. Right. The Pentagon pressures for these things, and I was in the Pentagon with an advisory committee. I know how these pressures work, and it's running rampant in this administration. It's running out of control, and people are starting to notice, and that's probably a good thing, but it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Hey, John, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Thought your perspective was great, raised some great points. Good to have you here. I'm going to move along, so I have a few minutes left with Elaine. And Julia's been hanging out for a while, too. She's in San Francisco listening to us there. Hi, Julia. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I had heard that the ACLU was suing to require that women be drafted, I guess, into the military, possibly be in combat. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, my organization filed a friend of the court brief before the Supreme Court just last week, Friday, and we have asked the Supreme Court to deny the petition for cert, that means to take up the case, because the petitioners are ignoring the fact that Congress should make decisions about selective service, not the courts. It's a very simple but profound constitutional argument. Yep. My organization and several others and some distinguished military leaders co-signed the Friend of the Court brief. And if you go to our website, www.cmrlink.org, look under news, you'll see a news release about what we did, and we'll be writing more about it in the coming weeks.
All right. And Julia, thanks.
Oh, No, shit. Thank you.
Well, I also should mention, I also filed testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee about the question of whether they should include women registration for Selective Service. Hmm. So we have civilian oversight. We need to question these issues. Congress needs to be aware.
I agree.
And that's how our Constitution sets it up.
Well said. All right. Julia, thanks for waiting. I appreciate you bringing that important point up. Brian
Thank
is
you.
In Iowa, and he served in the military with women. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah. I served in a major conflict in the desert. And I went into that conflict kind of neutral in that women in combat or in service. And I discovered a lot of things during that that war.
Yeah.
You know, women are wholly different than men in lots of different ways. You know, physical activity is one thing. I noticed right away the upper body strength of a woman's so much different than a man.
Yeah, of course.
Capability is so different the way it was built.
Yeah.
In addition to that, then as I discovered so many different differences that we have, you know, one is that women are much more susceptible to concussion. You know, that was something that was brought up at some point.
Yeah.
As well as there's the plumbing issue
of
the situation. If you're in a swampy area or dirty, women are much more susceptible to infection rates.
True.
Then we are also, you know, susceptible to a heat injury. Women have a different amount of sweat pores compared to men.
Hmm.
So we're in these mop suits or chemical warfare, and you're trying to keep cool. So that's one aspect that we found is, you know, these ladies are really going to go down quick. They just can't keep themselves cool in activity. They can keep themselves cool, they sit down and just relax in the shade.
Right.
But in activity, it was a whole different issue.
So
the
Brian,
long and short of it was that, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, because I only have a minute left for the doctor here. So what's your analysis? Where do you come away now with the direction the military should go?
Absolutely. There's combat arms, there's combat support, there's combat service support. I think women really are very beneficial for the military.
Yeah,
but
me too.
Only in the garrison type of environment.
Yeah.
Keep them out of the combat, even the combat service support.
Yeah.
Many other issues I could bring up besides the prisoner of war issue that is also a big problem.
No, I agree with you. And Brian, first of all, thanks for your service, for what you did, brother. I love it. My daughter's a U.S. Marine, and I'm grateful for so many of our military. Gosh, my heart goes out to them. Brian brought up wonderful points. I mean, so many different things. Is there a way we can find some common ground without outrage about and being politically incorrect? I mean, to his point, can we let women serve in the military, but, you know, where their strengths are? What's so wrong with that?
They're going to serve in the military. They always have, and we need women in the military. But we need sound policy. Sound policy means you don't pretend that men and women are identical because they're not. And all the evidence shows that. In load-bearing exercises, things that are very important in the infantry, that's the Armist's largest community, the infantry, you can't pretend that men and women are identical. And the further away you get from reality, the worse these problems become. And I don't know when the pendulum will swing back.
Yeah.
Right now, it's swung so far to the left, it looks like it'll never come back. But it's the only military we have, so we have to ask tough questions. Even when you get the heat, like Tucker Carlson got a lot of heat for raising these issues in a short commentary, it's a good thing that he did that. At least people are talking about the issue, and maybe Congress will pay attention and do something sensible for
Well, Elaine, I'm grateful for what you do there at the Center for Military Readiness, and I hope everyone will check it out. It's an independent public policy organization. They specialize in military personnel issues. Check them out at cmrlink.org. That's cmrlink.org. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show. Where else can you get news and issues of the day from a Catholic lens? Keep it here on Relevant Radio.
I love that bumper. I don't know what it is. You've got a great groove. Hey, it's good to be back here with you. Patrick Alog's on my board today. Jake's away. Patrick, thank you. Good to be here with you. And, of course, Lucas Holtz is on our phone. If you want to join us, Lucas will be taking your calls. And you can join anytime. 888-914-9149. So, the Holy Father responding to the German bishops on the blessing of same-sex unions. Have you followed this story at all? You know, for the ordinary person, there's really never any question in anyone's mind about whether or not Catholic clergy can somehow or other, you know, bless same-sex couples trying to act as if though they're married. There was just no way that that was going to happen. So some people might wonder why the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith felt that they needed to issue a document today to say, you know, hey, that's not going to happen, right? Catholic Church is not going to be blessing same-sex or so-called same-sex marriages, if you will, or, you know, same-sex unions. But the answer has to do with the church in Germany. Here's a news item from Rome Reports highlighting the, well, recent Vatican statement. Listen.
The Vatican responded in this official document to the tricky question of whether or not same-sex unions can receive the church's blessing. In its response, it says that it is not licit to impart a blessing on relationships or partnerships, even stable, that involve sexual activity outside of marriage, i.e. outside the indissoluble union of a man and a woman open in itself to the transmission of life. According to the document, blessing a same-sex couple could lead to the misunderstanding that the Church considers these unions valid. The note is signed by Cardinal Luis Ladaria, prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, and by his second-in-command, Archbishop Giacomo Morandi. They explain that the Pope is aware of the response and that he agrees with its publication. Pope Francis has always asked that the distinction be made between a gay person and a same-sex couple. That's why the text asks for other ways to demonstrate God's closeness to all people, and points out that a gay person can receive a blessing without recognizing his or her unions.
Le persone si devono accompagnare come li accompagna Gesù.
We must accompany people like Jesus would.
Una persona che ha questa condizione.
When this type of person comes before Jesus, he will never answer, leave because you are a homosexual. No.
To many, this response from the Vatican could be an indirect clarification of something the Pope said that was taken out of context and presented to the world in October in the documentary Francesco, which made it seem as if the Pope approved same-sex unions.
There's been a lot of confusion over this, hasn't there? I mean, the Holy Father said some stuff that has people scratching their head and wondering. Well, just to give you a little more perspective on the story, there's a synod that's going on, led by the bishops of the country of Germany. The bishops are calling into question the church's teaching that it's impossible for two people of the opposite sex to get, quote, married, just like it's impossible for a person to marry themselves, right? Himself or herself, or you marry a building or a tree or whatever, right? Of course, the popular culture has been putting pressure on the church to change this teaching. And thank God the CDF has just come out, as you just heard, issued that statement today saying that same-sex acts, they're not ordered to the Creator's plan. And that's not uncharitable. It's truthful. It's the way God ordained things. So being faithful to God, it's impossible for the church to bless what goes against that plan, right? It kind of makes sense. So I'm joined today by J.D. Flynn. He's a co-founder and the editor of a great website. I check it every day, and I think it's a great resource for you, especially if you want a faith-filled perspective on the issues of the day. It's called The Pillar, and it's a new Catholic news source that's out there. And I believe in supporting good Catholic sources. You know, I think we need them. I think we're outnumbered and we're outgunned in the culture right now. And I'll give you the web address. It's pillarcatholic.com. Okay, pillarcatholic.com. JD's been with me in the past, a very gifted canon lawyer, and I've invited him to help us better understand what's happening with this whole issue of same-sex marriage, where Pope Francis truly stands, and how this will all shake out. JD, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Oh, thanks so much, Drew, for having me. I really appreciate it.
You know, to me, where I sit here, it seems pretty obvious, but the why did the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith feel that they actually needed to issue a statement? I mean, the teaching of the church, as you know, you're a canon lawyer, it's very, very clear, but Give me your perspective on this. Will this quell the problem now?
Well, we'll see whether it quells the problem or amplifies it. So, yeah, the statement is in a certain way that came from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. You know, I've been talking to theologians and canon lawyers today who say, well, it's surprising in the sense that in a certain way it's kind of theology 101. The church is saying here that it's not appropriate for there to be liturgical blessings of, you know, relationships that are, by self-declaration, sexual relationships outside of the confines of marriage, which is something that applies not only to same-sex relationships, but with an ever sort of broadening cultural acceptance of various kinds of self-defined sexual relationships, it could apply to other kinds of relationships too. What the church is saying is that a liturgical blessing on a relationship that is not marriage gives it the appearance of being marriage, or suggests that the church is regarding it as marriage, or that it should be regarded as marriage, and that marriage is unique among sexual relationships because it's the sexual relationship that God has ordained, and the reason for our sexuality is towards expression in marriage for the unity of spouses and the procreation and education of children. So all of that is what's in the document, and it's pretty straightforward. You would hopefully learn that in a catechism class, but the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith had to issue this statement because the Catholic Church in Germany has been teaching something different in its catechism class, that an increasing number of Catholic dioceses in Germany have begun to offer liturgical blessings of same-sex marriages, which gives the appearance of there being sort of they're civil marriages, but gives the appearance of them being, marriages in the church's eyes and approved in the eyes of the church and regarded by the church in the same way as marriage. And so the CDF had to issue this document that basically explained again a sort of church's basic sacramental and liturgical theology about this as a kind of correction to the German bishops. Now, the really interesting question, which you and I were just talking about, is will the bishops take it as a correction and change what has become the praxis in some dioceses and change what has become a formal proposal right. among the German bishops who are undergoing a synod now? Or will this become a much sharper and much more acute point of disagreement between them and the Vatican, and what would be the consequences of that?
Yeah, so the long term, if you look down the road, I mean, either they say, okay, we're going to respect the Vicar of Christ on the earth and the CDF, and we'll dial back, or they persist, would that create a schism in the church? Would there be some sort of break between the German bishops and the rest of the church?
It's a possibility, right? So schism is essentially the refusal of obedience of the Pope and the bishops in communion with him. And so if the CDF has expressed the will of the Pope here, which is really just, very basic sacramental theology, and the bishops of Germany or any other bishops or priests were to say, no, we're not going to accept that, we're going to keep doing something else, it could indeed become the canonical situation of schism, a separation, a division in the church, which is an incredible tragedy. And I think Pope Francis must be really just. Yeah. It must be an incredibly difficult moment for the Pope to think, gosh, nearly the entire episcopate of a country is going in this direction, which is contrary to the teaching of the church. How can I work to bring them back and to preserve the unity of the church while there's becoming this ever more acute division? I think for me, one of the things I thought is we just need to pray for the Pope as I read this, because German bishops are almost certainly going to fire back. They've begun sort of some opening salvos today. And the Pope obviously wants to preserve the unity of the church because that's what the Lord wants. And so this is not a problem of his making, but a problem that he's tasked with solving.
Yeah, reason to pray. And as all part of the same body, I mean, we really need to pray for our brothers and sisters in Germany, especially our bishops and cardinals there. My guest is J.D. Flynn. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. You have a question, a comment, an insight. It's 888-914-9149. Love to hear from you. We'll take your calls here as well. So I'm curious what the reaction has been from various parts of the church over this statement. It's not just Germany and Rome. How's the rest of the universal church responding? Are there other areas, other countries that share one view versus another?
Well, Germany's kind of interesting because it is this area that has this sort of high concentration of bishops and theologians who are all advancing this vision. a monolith. There are certainly bishops who are pushing back against that, but for the majority. Here in the U.S., you know, some of the more prominent Catholic voices, of course, there have been bishops and theologians and priests who have praised the CDF statement, but of course there are some who I think have sort of tried to downplay it. Mm-hmm. So I saw the Washington Post today, a religious sister, a theologian sort of who has been an advocate for same-sex marriage in some ways, saying, well, you know, this has to be understood in its context, and there needs to be more discussion, and, you know, of course, still the church could bless each individual in a committed relationship, you know, for that commitment, which is a bit of a dodge, obviously. And so you'll see, I think, people trying to downplay it, people trying to use the other words of the Pope, other sentiments of the Pope to try to sort of say, well, you need to understand this context, and the Pope doesn't obviously mean this, or the Pope was used in some ways. But for the most part, I think it's abundantly clear that this is this is not even about the question of sort of civil unions or anything that's more complex. It's just a very clear question of, can the church in her worship and liturgy bless something which is not marriage?
Yeah, all right. Well, let's do this, and we'll grab a few calls for you. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. We'll start in Austin, Texas. Kurt dialed in, and he's got a question for you, JD. Let's go to Austin. Hi, Kurt. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I've just got a real simple solution for me. I mean, it seems very simple. If I'm an employer and my employees are not doing right, I fire them and I get some new employees. I mean, these bishops are teaching grave error, in which it seems they are. Get rid of them and get some good Orthodox bishops in there, and problem solved. Thank you,
Kurt. Let's address that, because I think that's an interesting point. Why not assign bishops, to those particular dioceses where this is coming up? And maybe we can back up to, maybe you can broaden your scope, too. Let's talk about that. Can the Holy Father say, okay, I'm going to remove these bishops, remove them, and I'm going to put somebody that is more true to the teaching of the church? Maybe you could also define, somebody may not know what a synod is, right? Give a brief overview of what's being discussed amongst this German synod, the synodal process, if you will, and whether or not what they're doing is really a proper synod, and how the Holy Father can respond.
Sure, that's a couple of questions. Let's start with how being a bishop works in this context. A lot of times you hear people, I think, who look at the problems of the church and they say, just what you said, Kurt, I'm glad you called it, I'm glad you said it. We should run the church like a business. I run a business, and if someone in my business weren't performing, I'd out them. Right. And it makes sense, you know, I get it. The trouble is that theologically the church is a lot more like a family than it is like a business. And a family has a head, but each person is a member of the family in a far more complicated way than they are an employee, and they have they have, by virtue of their episcopal ordination, by virtue of their presbyteral ordination, by virtue of their baptism, you know, they have a certain set of relationships to the church that is not just as simple as fire them. The Pope can, of course, request the resignation of a bishop, but, you know, he has to weigh what the implications of that. That's a very grave step. So he has to weigh kind of what the implications of that are for people who he ultimately wants to keep in the communion of the church, and who ultimately he wants to help get to heaven. And so he has to make all these sort of prudential judgments in the context of something that ultimately feels a lot more like a family, and also comes with certain canonical rights and limitations on what can be done and those kinds of things too. So I appreciate the sentiment, but I often find that the reality is a lot more complex, especially because the Pope's goal is the goal of every Pope is to help people get to heaven. And so he has to weigh, you know, what will be, he has to look at all the pieces on the board as he thinks about what decisions to make and take a long view. And of course, you know, the interesting thing about the history of the church is that there have been sort of fights over theology for as long as there's been a church, right? Thinking about the apostles getting together at Jerusalem to disagree about what should be done over Jewish dietary laws and other things, circumcision and other things. And so there's always been these disagreements, and the question is how they can be handled in a way that is fruitful, that resolves the issue. And is seen as a positive resolution instead of sometimes just the sheer application of power is needed, but sometimes that's not always an elegant solution to the problem.
All right, there you have it. That is J.D. Flynn, and I want to thank you, J.D., for being with us. Always good to talk with you, and thank you for the good work you do at the Pillar. And if that is new to you, you can check out PillarCatholic.com. PillarCatholic.com. We at Relevant Radio subscribe. They do some great reporting. And I'll continue to follow this story. I know it has resonated with a lot of people. And if you miss this, you want to share it with someone that you love, simply go to relevantradio.com. Look for my show archives, and you'll find it there. Just look for JD's name or for the topic, and it'll be there. Thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. Cale Clark is coming up in a moment. He's got an interesting show. What I'm hearing from his producers before the show is that he's going to talk about the one time Cale got fired for talking about divine mercy. Really, Patrick? That's pretty interesting. I've got to stay tuned. Now he's got me hooked. All right, Cale. You're going to make me late for dinner. Hey, it's great hanging out with you. Don't forget, my book is free and it's yours, and I want to give it to you. Go to relevantradio.com and sign up for it. We'll even pay the shipping and handling. No strings attached. It's that time of year when really I think we should be focusing our eyes on God's great mercy. We approach the Triduum and the great Feast of Mercy. This is a gift that you'll be blessed by. Until we talk tomorrow, I'll remember you in my prayers. Please do the same for me. God bless.